Welcome back to another episode of the Exterminatus Podcast, all things competitive in the world of Warhammer 40,000. My name's Eric, with us is my co-host, Ray.
Hello.
And of course, Jim is with us this week.
What's up?
Hey, we got lots to go over this week. A lot of big splash of the orcs finally being out in the wild, so a lot of people have got their hands on that. Well, do a lot of people have their hands on it? It seems to be the question at this point. We also had the Lone Star Open, a very interesting event, a lot of opinions as well, some interesting news post-event that we'll need to get into. And last but not least, Ray's back from his visit to Las Vegas. He was actually at the new venue for the Las Vegas Open in 2022. So Ray, let's start with that. What can you tell us about the Rio?
Well, it's an interesting casino choice. It's pretty nice because they don't charge for parking. And
yay!
It's off the strip, which, I mean, I know being on the strip is actually really nice, but it's useful if you're trying to get there in that you don't have to worry about a lot of the traffic of the strip. But it's just on the other side of the freeway, so if you want to go from there to the strip, it's not long at all to get there. You can get there.
So walking distance, or is it still driving at that point?
Could walk. I wouldn't. As far as the freeway goes, it's a rather wide freeway. It seems like it's like six lanes each direction. So that, as I've heard it put from other people, when it gets dark, a little sketchy.
Oh, great. Okay.
So I would.
All right. So tell us about the inside.
Sure. So the inside of all the. So of all the casinos I've been inside, which is actually a fair few, it's probably got the worst when it comes to the air circulation. So if there's more than just a couple people smoking a cigarette and you're in the area, and by the area I mean almost anywhere on that first floor near the gambling, you're going to smell cigarettes. The good news is the venue itself will be a fair distance away from that. It's the casino floor, it takes up the first front, and the area where this will be held is a little off to from the front of the building to the left and in the back. It's a fair walk, so if you've got purse for your army, you'll be happy you have them. If your army is heavy and you're carrying it, you may wish you had wheels. You're pretty much going to walk completely past like the entire swimming pool area to get back there. Now, if you're there's two towers with that have the hotel rooms. There's the one I stayed in, which is the taller one. It's the Masquerade Tower. Then there's the shorter tower, which unfortunately I keep forgetting the name of. That one's actually much closer.
So it's the Masquerade Tower, the Vampire Tower. Then make the other one the Werewolf Tower.
Sure. The Masquerade Tower is probably the busiest when it comes to people going up and down it, because it's got a nightclub and steakhouse on the top floor, which is the 51st floor. There are actually two sets of there are four elevators that are dedicated for floors 20 to 51, and there are elevators that are dedicated to first 21 floors. So if you're in that tower, as long as all of the elevators are working, it shouldn't be too bad. That being said, the weekend I was up there, two of the elevators were down. One was down for maintenance the whole weekend. The other one, they had turned off because someone had thrown up in it. And that happened on Saturday night, and it was never opened up Monday when we left. So, and it's busy enough that two elevators means it's almost always full. So the rooms themselves weren't bad. They seemed a little dated in some. The good news is if for any reason you try to sleep in, they've got those blackout curtains that work.
I'm trying to remember, they said something, I think it may have been on Frontline, it's signals from the Frontline there, that the rooms are actually set up more like suites. As opposed to, is that the case, or is it just a specific room block that they're looking at?
So this is going to be an instance of me not really necessarily understanding the difference between what makes something a suite.
The idea that there's a common room, and then there's actually like separate bedrooms off of it, as opposed to just being one giant bedroom with two beds and a TV.
Okay. So the room I was in was not a suite. Okay. If you're staying in a suite, it might be a little bit different. I don't even know if it's going to be in the same tower, to be honest. So I can't really answer how that those rooms. You can look at the pictures, and the pictures will get you so. One of was just going to say real quick, this is, and this might save some people some time if they remember this. The parking that's on the east side, which is basically the one that's between the freeway and hotel itself, is four floors, or just a parking garage. The first floor is for like the valet parking and pickups. And then there's two actual covered floors, and then there's the easiest way to get to the hotel is to go up to the fourth floor, where there is a bridge where you can walk across it to get to the casino. It'll take you to the back end of the little gambling section that's also got some these there. There's an arcade for kids. There's a few places to grab. And I'll bring you into the second floor, so you have to find either the escalator or the elevator to get down to the first floor and then walk up to the front to check.
Cool. Any notable restaurants within the community? The casino itself?
There were a few restaurants when we were there. Quite a few. They had one. It's kind of like a brunch place that was closed. They had the buffet closed. I don't think any of the buffets were missed. There was some sort of a Guy Fieri restaurant in there that was closed. Never saw. There was a bar and grill that was open. It was pretty good and fairly priced. Although it is basically right smack dab in the middle of the casino gambling area. Mm-hmm. There was a Smash Burger that is at least advertised Friday and Saturday night being open till 2 a.m. I don't know if they were just short-staffed because they didn't end up staying quite that late. They were open till maybe midnight. And then they've got a Wetzel's Pretzel, which is open till 2 o'clock almost every night, except for Sunday night. There was a Starbucks and with like an actual setup building area for Starbucks and then one of those little like side kiosks. They only had the side kiosk one.
Interesting that these all, I'm assuming these are all closed because of COVID restrictions at this point.
So some of it,
lack of staff.
I think some of it was just lack of staff. I kind of had the impression that it wasn't really their busiest weekend. So they may have just been not had quite as many. So a lot of this could be very different, too. By the time there's a convention, they may hire staff to make sure that every time that LVO's there. As far as something like room service, there were no menus in the rooms, most likely due to COVID. So I couldn't tell you what that looks like. So as far as like amenities go, they had like three pools that as long as, you know, the weather is nice, I didn't catch if they were heated. They do have like a little like a fitness area for people that are staying.
All right. So a little bit of a couple options there as well. Did you by chance see the convention area where the actual tournament will be?
So I didn't get, they didn't have it open where I could go inside, but I did get up to the actual area where the, I guess you call them rooms are, halls. Mm-hmm. It's actually a pretty good setup. It looks like that they could, a lot of like the initial like people signing up and everything outside of all the halls because they have like a desk area. Kind of makes you think of like when you walk in to actually like, check in and check out, but it's all the way back there in that convention area. There is a fair amount of space, so it doesn't look like it'd be too cramped, although depending on how many people end up being there, that could change.
It's interesting. So it sounds pretty similar because that was one of the concerns was getting from the room with your display board to the actual casino where you know, to play, well, not the casino, but the convention area where the actual event was. So that sounds like it's about the same. Just got to meander through the, get some, have your buddies run blocking for you on the elevator and then meander to the halfway across the casino to get there. But, it's got,
If the room block is in that second shorter tower, it won't be anywhere near as bad walking because it'll just be kind of, you walk sort of towards the actual main casino, and then you almost turn around and go into the next.
Mm-hmm. All right, that doesn't sound too bad. Food situation, looks like you're going to be after doing some driving because that was one thing I did like about the other location was there were several fun restaurants, at least within walking distance. So even if it did take a couple blocks to get down the street, but sounds like it might be further to walk than that now. So
yeah, we found the easiest thing for us to do was to just take it by like setting up the Uber 20 minutes ahead. A lot of times we were only paying $9 to get from where we were to somewhere on the strip.
Mm-hmm. That's actually probably a good idea. Probably just do that. Jim, what are your thoughts on the venue?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. It's hard to say. It sounds like it's advantages and some disadvantages from their place. So usually not really my, I don't really care that much as long as it's good, I guess.
Yeah, part of me is like, okay, so, you know, most of your time is going to be spent in that convention hall and playing the event. And that's what I'm thinking, like, okay, while I'm in town, what's available? The steakhouse on that top floor there, that sounds interesting. That might be worthy of a reservation ahead of time and save myself the walk. But I also got my old favorite, so sometimes to break that habit.
Yeah, if you're thinking about doing a reservation, do it well in advance. We weren't there. It's, you know, this last weekend that we went wasn't, you know, anything special. Almost every day, reservation, you have people waiting in line for just about any place to eat except whatever Denny's was on the strip that you picked.
Your bag. Did you have a chance to try the food in the area?
Yeah, I tried a few of the places in the area. I didn't do any of the, you know, the usual stuff, things that, you know, you can find it almost any city.
Right.
Kind of stuck with the things that, you know, hey, this is Vegas. I've never had something like this before. There was a Mexican food place called the El Segundo Sol that we tried out. So just a little north of Treasure Island, and it was actually really good. You know, a lot of your basic Mexican, you get things like the bottomless chips, lots of different drink options. And it's actually set up where it can be open. So the wall that faces the strip is actually kind of like set up where it can be like retracted in. So it'll end up being like open faced.
Okay, that sounds cool.
But a lot of the stuff that we stuck to was, when it came to eating, was at the Caesar's Palace. So there was a, just kind of an American food place, like Cafe Americana. We ate there. Again, okay, fairly priced, all things considered. One of those things that you order something, you expect, you know, sometimes you order something and you expect a small dish and you get surprised.
Mm-hmm.
And then the only other place that we ate at was a place called the Trevi, which is in kind of the, call it the mall area of Caesar's Palace. Kind of an upscale Italian place. Not bad. Pretty good. A little weird, I admit, my experience when it comes to eating Italian. But, you know, it's pretty hard to go wrong when it comes to picking out food places in Vegas.
Right. Yeah, for the most part, they're pretty good. I have to admit, that one burger place we used to go to in between Bally's and Paris really went downhill fast. So I was like, oh my God, why do we see? But it's always like, when you check in, you get there late, and it's just easy to get to. So it was like, oh, like the first year we were there was great. Second year was, oh, it's pretty good. Last time we went, we're like, why are we here? It was just like cut bait now. This is terrible. So
yeah. And I'll admit, the last time I had been to Vegas was like 2013. So it was very different than what I remember. So, I mean, there's so many food places to...
All right, so I'll have to map out a couple spots and take a look at this before the big event in January. But
are you a gamer that has more bare plastic than you have time to paint? Do paintbrushes spontaneously combust when you hold them? If either of these is true, contact White Crow Studios and get your models painted by a college-trained professional painter. You can contact Bo at whitecrow.commissions@gmail.com and view his previously painted models at White Crow Studios on Facebook.
Hey listeners, this is Raymond with the Extreme Honest Podcast here to talk to you about KR cases. If you're like me and you're constantly looking for that better way to store your armies, then look no further than KR Cases. That's right, this is the foam company known for their soft blue foam in the cardboard cases. They're a great way to mix and match whenever you're heading out for that next tournament. You can just swap out those boxes, and no need to worry about switching the foam in and out. They're sturdy, the boxes help protect your models, and when you order, they come fast, the order is right, and for a better price than the other guy. So go to krcases.com, and when you place your order, be sure to mention the Exterminatus podcast.
Luckily, though, we had another Frontline Gaming event this past weekend, and that would be the Lone Star Open, another in the barrage of super majors between Games Workshop and Frontline Gaming putting things out, and led us right into the top eight that we had leading into Sunday's action. So your top eight was the following. You had John Lennon, who's playing Adeptus Sororitas, playing Matthew Geyer in the first round of the split that they did. Matthew was playing Adbeck, and John was able to take that match. Friend of the show, Colin McDade, was actually, he's left the clowns behind and played Adbeck as well. And he was able to take out Peyton Priest with his Drukhari. Then Marshall Preston was playing Necrons of all lists, and he drew Oliver Smitty with White Scars and was able to defeat him as well. And then Sean Naden coming in with a very similar list, though he's been playing all along, is Eldari Harlequin mix with a ton of Dark Reapers and Shadows. What's it called? Sweet Night Spinners. It's the tank. He was able to take out Tyler Johnson's Drukhari, which led us to our final four. John Lennon playing Colin McDade. And John Lennon once again goes 2-0 in the final rounds against Admech, moving him to the finals. Sean Dane was able to take care of Marshall Preston's Necrons, leading us to the big finale with John Lennon taking the top prize for the event. So pretty exciting there. Surprised sisters were able to run the table against Admech like that?
They seem to be pretty strong. I know not many people were talking about them, but that's because everybody was focusing so the Admech.
Jim, what do you think of that?
Well, John, I don't know if you guys looked at John's list, but he took a Battle Sanctum, and because of the list was the event was player placed terrain, he was able to kind of I guess take advantage of that fact and have basically an extra fortification of line of sight blockman zone every game, which meant he kind of, I don't want to say abused, but he definitely took advantage of the tournament format to build kind of like a gimmick in the list in the form of the Battle Sanctum.
The Battle Sanctum, correct me if I'm wrong, it's not only just line of sight blocking, but it also provides, I don't even remember what the buff it provides off this
topic. So a unit of infantry can essentially pray for it every turn, pray at it every turn, and they get an extra miracle dice.
Oh, that's pretty good. Okay.
But what he's able to do with it is essentially build using the, I think, the Sacrosants, who have the bodyguard rule. He's able to string them out in such a way with Celestine so that the bodyguards were behind line of sight blocking terrain. The Celestine was, there was a Gemini 3 inches from them. And then another 2 inches from them would be another Gemini. And then another 2 inches from them would be the Celestine, who would be within 3 inches of an objective. So he was able to essentially have hold two objectives, including one out in the open with the Celestine. But because she was with the Sacrosants, who were behind the Battle Sanctum, essentially became untargetable. And so he was able to abuse this mechanic for some of his wins. Obviously, John's an excellent player, so I don't want him to take anything away from that. But he definitely took advantage of a quirk in the terrain rules to win the event. And I think, you know, had it not been player placed terrain, had it been, and he had just had to run kind of like a straight list.
So this was kind of a mixed, I saw a lot of, let's say, less than constructive criticism about the player placed terrain, but part of me is like, you knew what it was going in, and here's a player who planned accordingly. So I know player placed terrain kind of got a bad rap, especially at Adepticon. Not sure if it was the player placed part of it or this the terrain itself that made it a bad rep. But where do you guys fall on this? Is this the way to finally get around the perfect map and just say you guys do it and figure it out round by round?
No, I don't like it. I mean, I think it's lazy. The TOs could just easily come up with terrain maps for each scenario and just have the players set up the terrain according to a certain terrain map. It's not that hard. And you only need to really do kind of a map for every table you have, or sorry, for every terrain set you have for the various scenarios. So especially for FLG, if they're going to be running events all year, I mean, it'd be worth the investment to think those terrain maps out. It also stops some abuses. I don't know, player place for me, it's not very interesting, I guess.
Okay.
I don't like the idea that players have so much agency over terrain. I think it leads to even the best case scenario. At least.
And that was interesting. That was a lot of the original thought behind it was people gaming the system, but it was a way of lesser talented players were getting taken advantage of, which I was kind of like, okay. Interesting, we're looking at, didn't realize we were handicapping for those type of players, but I get the point. Ray, what about you in terms of player placed terrain when it comes to tournaments?
When it comes to tournaments, I'm actually more for the idea of them being set up tournament organizer. I find that it saves time, mostly, more than anything else, because it can already take I've seen people take up to half an hour just setting their armies up before they even start. We really want to add time while they sit and talk. Oh, let's put this terrain there, that terrain over there. No, just this is a terrain. This is how it's set up. This is the rules attached to the.
Yeah. We had a similar issue with that with a local tournament over here where players round by round were reclassifying terrain, even though it was TO placed. I mean, it's just, it might be just my inner control freak, but I agree with all three, you know, the three of us, I think, in agreement. Player placed terrain is just, in a competitive setting, is just a rife for a bad situation. Now, on the other hand, there should be, I'd like to see more fortifications in the game, and I'm not sure how to make that work, but, you know, someday I'll finally come up with that perfect map, but still working on it as we speak. So just trying to work my way through that. Some additional notes there after the so we're on Monday morning, Monday evening as we are recording this evening. And Sean Naden unfortunately had some bad news and recognized that he made an error in his list building. And basically, when it comes to his large Harlequin unit, which he was using repetitively to the last, which is the secondary if they live, they get bonus points. We know that. While he had the wrong war gear in place, which meant that the unit shouldn't have been, basically was at the wrong point cost, and it did actually would have affected the outcome of several games as well. So he actually has volunteered to withdraw his participation in the event and apologize to not only the event organizers, but also his opponents and all the other players in the group. So sad to see that, you know, as he kind of jokingly said he also forgot to give himself a free Exarch. So clearly check your list before going to an event. Have a friend check it if it's not your strength. But what do you guys think of that announcement?
Well, I think that I think FLG should actually just be more than just him forfeiting the event. I hope it's not a voluntary thing where they ultimately decide not to do it. I think as much as I believe that Sean made the mistake in accidentally clear because he self-reported, which I think was the right thing to do. But ultimately, we, you know, as I've advocated many times, we can't just because someone admits to a mistake doesn't mean that their consequence should be somehow lesser than if someone had made that mistake or as if they're cheating. So from my perspective, regardless of what Sean wants, he should be just disqualified from the event. And his point, any point stripped. I don't think there should be any question about that. So I'm hoping that the TOs actually move ahead with that. I don't think his, as much as he thinks he liked to think that the outcome of his games wouldn't have changed or would essentially be the same. I mean, we'll never know that, right? Because had there been different to the last targets, it's not like they would have played the game the exact same way, right? So he would have played it different. His opponent would have played him different. That could have been a bigger difference than, you know, he's just assuming that, you know, okay, well, let's just pretend the unit died. Well, that's not really exactly one for one replacement for how the players would have played that game. So I personally think that the whole section of his apology where he talks about what could have happened or would have happened, I don't think that's really legitimate. I think we'll never know what happened. And so I think the proper thing for him to be done, regardless of what he thinks, is that he should just be disqualified. Be any ifs, ands, or buts, no questions asked. You know, I think that's the right thing to do, and I hope FLG actually does that, and they don't just slap him on the wrist again like they did on like with the Razor Wing Flock in Alamo, I think it was. And then for Sean, you know, he needs to do better. I mean, he's number one in the ITC. I don't know if he still is with John Winning, but number one in the ITC. And those kinds of caliber players should not be making these kinds of mistakes ever. So, regardless of his excuse of not being good at list, not good enough caliber.
Ray, your thoughts?
Well, he did catch. Unfortunately, it was after the event, not during the event. So, yeah, it definitely warrants disqualification. I do think something like a loss of points. Would that not go? Maybe I'm forgetting this particular thing with how they do things in the ITC. Would he not just lose all of his points for disqualification?
I don't think he should get any points for that event. I don't think, obviously, for that event.
Well, is it a... He says himself that it warrants a disqualification. So I mean, if that means that,
right?
If that means no, you know, no points for the event, points for the event.
But the question is like he's saying I'm like, oh, happy to take this disqualification. The question is, will the TOs actually apply that?
That's the question, and ultimately, I think
they should absolutely. Yeah, there shouldn't be them looking at it. I mean, like, well, you know, since he was self-reported and since he was like honest, we're gonna let him go this time.
Right, but I think it's important to not. I think it's important that when it comes to that we hold the TOs liable for what happens, not Sean himself for it.
Well, I agree. That's what I'm just saying. But what we've seen from the TOs in the past is that they're often spineless when it comes to this stuff.
Yeah, and like we should hold it's one of those things as a community should hold the tournament organizer accountable for things like that. So if, and this is me talking to the listeners, if you think that's the case and they don't do it, don't just complain to any person who's on Facebook who happens to play the game. Don't go after Sean. Discuss it with the tournament organizer.
Kind of goes back to the, how do you check 200 lists, ahead of time. So that's always been one of the harder things to do, but that was the fun part. Was not one of my fun parts of being a TO was just going through all these lists and kind of reloading, kind of going through them and making sure did I catch everything and finding out, yep, sure enough, I did miss something. But yeah, that's anyway, it's been caught and we'll see. Yeah, be curious to see how it'll be levied at this point. But
and the worst part is this. This comes from, basically, this has to do with secondaries, correct? That's what this comes down to? Yeah. So, and this screws, in some ways, the whole secondary structure is a little clunky. And, here's an example. Why do we have a rule that's complicated? And while it's easy to catch, it's easy for someone to overlook something like this. Now, I know it's easy
to look. But, this is just a case of Sean writing an incorrect pointed list. So, regardless of whether he picked those secondaries or not, the point cost of his units are incorrect. So that's not like that has nothing to do with secondary. The secondary is really easy once you just understand what units are the highest points. So I think it's a cop-out to blame the secondary. Like, he just needs to make sure that like a unit is the points that he says it is. That shouldn't be like a high bar.
I'm trying to figure out if was his list still under 2,000 points at this point.
I believe it was.
Okay.
It wasn't.
Okay. But it was just, at the wrong point level. So therefore the, okay. Anyway. But all right, we will, as the ruling comes out from the tournament organizers from that particular event, we will also have that posted on our Facebook page, as that will most likely come after our recording tonight. So look forward to seeing that. And obviously, I was kind of griping about this prior to recording. Probably explains why the ITC Top 10 has not been updated yet. They're probably still working out what they're going to do about all this. Because I even looked at John Lennon's list and see if he was... list of events, rather, and see if he was granted enough points to leapfrog Sean for the top spot. And so saw that they were not updated, so maybe they're still working on that as we speak. So again, look for one of our, it's becoming quite a fan favorite on the Facebook page, where we post that in graphic form. So, in other news, notice from Good Old Games Workshop, Jim, you've been asking for these Sisters of Battle, the missing tank, the missing models, the last wave. It finally came out this week.
It goes on pre-order next week, yeah. It's good to know.
Yep. So all that ready to move on. So looks excited that we finally wrapped up on that. Orc Codex, like I said, the Beast Naga box seems to be gradually matriculating the same drip-drip method that we've been seeing all summer. Right, you were able to get a box. Tell us what's in the box.
Well, box comes with, what is it? There's that character, the Runt Herd character. What is it? Zograd. Mm. There's 20 of the Beast Snaga boys. They are a new troop unit. They're called Squig Hog boys. You get a unit of 3 of those. And then you get a knob on Smash a Squid. So it's too crazy. It's, it's not even 500 points.
But you actually get the full Orc Codex in it, right?
Yes.
Okay, that's still scratching my head at this point. I know we talked about this on a previous episode, but I was wondering if you were actually going to get the full Codex, or you're just going to get, like, here's the instruction manual and here's the data slates for what's in the box. So from what we've heard, 4 copies got out to each store at this point?
Yeah.
So this is actually out in the wild. If you can't buy the Codex separately yet, you can only get the Codex in this box, correct?
Correct.
Okay.
And I actually heard a rumor, I don't know if it's true or not, but it would be really crazy if it was, that the actual Codex won't be out until October.
I've heard something similar to that. It wasn't quite that late, but either way, it's kind of strange. Why would there be any larger delay than maybe 2 weeks? I'm surprised it's not available. Mm-hmm. So, like, go ahead.
Given the news about Thousand Suns today and Grey Knights with their little article about the battle box, I would not be surprised if those two codexes drop before the actual Orc codex and the Orc from that battle box drops, like, say, next week or something.
Right.
Yeah, this seems kind of like a push for them to make this quarter look like to their sales.
No. I'm going to sound like real sour grapes at this point. You want your sales to look good? Get product on the street. People have money that are willing to pay.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you really didn't even need to come out. If they even said, look, we're not coming out with a new product for the next 3 weeks, but guess what's back in stock? They would still make their sales quarters. So that, that's kind of frustrating. I'm just trying to think of from both a player standpoint and a TO standpoint. And I remember, Jim, you brought it up, and I was like, I think we'll get to that point. Yep, well, here we are. Is that codex even legal at this point? I mean, I know technically it's an official release, but it's such a limited release. Is it really something that we can play with, or are we just in a regular setting?
I mean, I wouldn't probably allow it if it was my tournament until the actual street date of the main codex. But
yeah. I thought I read somewhere.
I know we're allowing it in our 40K league, but that's a little bit more casual.
Right.
I thought I read somewhere that GW said that one of their events was going to end up happening before the actual codex. Yeah. And so who's playing Orcs is going to be playing the old codex.
Yeah, they didn't necessarily say it was going to be before the event. Before the codex. They just said that the codex won't be out in time for it. So whether that means it's out before the event, but very close to the event, or if it's out after the event is not quite clear. But it's definitely going to be too close to the event whenever it does release that they won't allow it. And because of the fact that I assume only the limited edition book will be allowed or released at that point. Still, so it's a no-go. It feels really weird.
This isn't a wide release, so no tournament organizer should allow this book yet.
Interesting. Okay. Another conundrum here to work through. So, oh boy, I can't wait for this to finally end. And then, of course, not sure if you've had experienced the same thing in your area, Jim, but here locally between Ray and I, COVID cases are back on the rise. So I am. Good news is we've already set up our venue for our November event. The Akatio Onslaught is already COVID safe. We already had safe distancing already in place. So the ticket sales are reflective to that maximum size. But we're back up to well over 1,000 new cases a day. So I'm like, oh no, not this again. So we could see pause in the ITC season, at least here in North America.
Yeah, we've had a slight uptick because our mask restrictions have been lifted, and that was expected, but it hasn't gotten out of control yet. There's lots of now. We have seen a spike in some of the more rural communities, though, where there's a lot more vax resistance.
Right.
It's a very high rate. I think Canada's actually now surpassed the US for total with one shot and also have less.
Yeah, that too. Anyway. So, as I mentioned, the ITC Top 10 normally be going over that at this point in the show, but apparently this still needs to be updated. Look for that later in the week, again, on our Facebook page, on our very popular graphical demonstration of who's in the lead and their performance in the previous week. Jim, what do you got going on your stream the next few weeks?
Nothing, man. I'm out of here. Headed out of town this weekend, and then Charity Hammer the following weekend, so make sure to tune into that. On the BiffBot channel, I think it's getting restreamed on Art of War and Canhammer, and then I'm not back until town until the 16th, so I'll be off the internet for a while.
Okay. And I'm just curious, with Charity Hammer, is it setless, or are you allowed to kind of mix and match list? Because I've heard both you and Alex mentioned that you may bring two or three different armies.
Well, there's each player is basically playing in a few different events, I guess. So there's a GT, a single elimination GT, which most of us are playing in. So we need a list for that. That's going to be set. And then we're playing a few kind of more casual games on stream versus players. So for those, I might bring a different list. So far, I have three games, three or four games confirmed that I'm definitely playing. And then potentially if I win my first round of the GT, it could be more.
Well, best of luck. We'll be cheering you on. And once again, where can we find that if we wanted to watch that?
Just check out charityhammer.com for all the stream links. You can also check out Best in Faction Discord and podcast links as well. But I believe their Twitch channel is the main place to go. But because there's going to be multiple games happening at once, I think Art of War and on Canhammer will also have a stream running, depending on the table. So they'll be
fantastic. All right. Ray, anything else to add before we wrap things up?
I don't think so.
All right. So right now we'll be back in the next 2 weeks, and then Jim will join us after that. So again, best of luck in Charity Hammer. We'll be watching that closely. So in the meantime, my name's Eric.
I'm Raymond.
And thank you for listening to the Exterminatus podcast.